cricket, lovely cricket. Cricket lick the ball before it
reaches. Yes indeed, it's that time of the week again. 98 Not Out, Phoenix FM's weekly cricket show. With me, Darren Mutu. Now, it's not exactly cricket weather here, but there's plenty going on all around the world. I'll give you an update on what I'm seeing and hearing from the world of cricket. Guest tonight, we've got Don Topley, old friend of the show, and David Griffin. And they will be sharing with us their memories of Mike Proctor, that legendary cricketer who passed away sadly last weekend at the age of 77. We've also got a world exclusive. Mr. Mark Butcher has got a new album coming out very, very soon. And he's very kindly sent me a couple of tracks from that album, which will be getting their world premiere on tonight's show. And I've had a listen, they're excellent, excellent. All the usual other stuff as well, bit of music, bit of chat. As always, you're listening to Phoenix FM 98 on the FM dial via the internet, phoenixfm.com. Via Mixcloud, go to mixcloud.com. Or you can just shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. Alright, let's crack on. It's cricket birthdays of the week. As usual, some great names of people celebrating their birthdays this week. From the world of cricket, Philip de Freitas, 58. West Indies, O'Shane Thomas, 27. Mason Crane, also 27. Friend of the show, Azhar Ali, 39. Eddie Hemmings, 75. Australia's Michael Slater, 54. Don Topley, you'll be hearing more from him later, hits 60. And not only that, his son Reece Topley, 30 years old. Lancashire legend Farouk Engineer, 86. Former Essex player Sean Tate, 41. Devon Malcolm, 61. Shane Shillingford, 41. England's Harry Brook, 25. Herschel Gibbs, 50. Raise your bat, sir. Angelo Pereira, 34. Steve Elworthy, 59. Mike Whitney, 65. Derek Randall, 73. And John Lever, 75. There you go. And remember, if you want to have your name or someone you know's name added to the birthdays list, get in touch. You can email me radio@phoenixfm.com, title your mail 19 or out birthdays, and just give me some details of who it is, how old they are. You know, if you want to say a little bit about them, feel free. It's always good to hear from everyone taking part in the show.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Okay, so I said we would have some exclusive music tonight, and here is the first track of the evening from Mark Butcher's upcoming album. I don't know what the album's going to be called, but anyway, this is Mark, and this track is called As the Sun Hits the Sea.
Listen to multitudes as the sun hits the sea. Read the beats in my room. What is wrong with me? That wherever I end up, whatever the scene, there's always somewhere I should be. Harvest great beauty, consume sweet memory. Find reward in my duties. What's wrong with me? that wherever I end up, whatever the scene, there's always elsewhere I could be. Trauma, felt love's poetry. Placed jewels upon you, nothing's wrong with me. But wherever I end up, whatever the scene, there's always somewhere I could be. They come in rolling tides, these thoughts are mine. Come paint a perfect picture by my side. Queenstown, Karachi, Trenchtown to Sicily, flamencos, mariachis, what the hell's wrong with me? That wherever I end up, whatever the scene, there's always elsewhere, and Lord knows I care.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
And that was Mark Butcher, new music, As the Sun Hits the Sea. That's the first time that's been played anywhere on this planet. And there will be another track from him coming up later in the show.
Hello to Darren and the listeners of 98 Not Out. Just to let you know that the March issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now, and the centrepiece is a superb deep dive by Sam Morshead into county finances. We also have Monty Panesar writing about his favourite cricketer, Sachin Tendulkar. And making up the lineup is David Gower, Mike Brearley, Nasser Hussain, George DeBell, Kieran Pollard and Tanya Aldred. That's the March issue of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
Thanks to Hugh Turberville, and make sure you get that copy of the Cricketer magazine. Right, England, the fourth test against India starts at 4 a.m. Tomorrow morning, early doors. Set your alarm clocks. Now, they've named Ollie Robinson and Sherry Basher in their team for the fourth test against India in Ranchi. Seema Robinson, 30 years old, will play his first match of the series, while off-spinner Basher, just 20, is recalled after he was rested for the third test. Leg spinner Rayan Ahmed, 19, and 34-year-old pace bowler Mark Wood are the players to miss out. England have also kept faith with middle-order batsman Johnny Bairstow. That's despite a run of modest scores. Lots of speculation in the press and in social media about whether Bairstow should be part of this team going forward, but he's still there. His place had come under increased scrutiny after averaging 17 in six innings with a top score of just 37. India, of course, lead the five-match series 2-1. There are two matches left to play. So the England team is as follows: Zach Crawley, Ben Duckett, Ollie Pope, Joe Root, Johnny Bairstow, Ben Stokes as captain, Ben Foulkes with the gloves, Tom Hartley, Ollie Robinson, James Anderson and Shoaib Basher.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Freshly back from South Africa is my good old mate Don Topley. But after a trip that we'll talk more about in a moment, he returned back just in time for the sad news of Mike Proctor's passing. Don goes back a long way with Mike and was recently with him. So, Don, let's love to hear your thoughts on the great man.
Yeah, it's really sad. In a way, it hadn't been unexpected because he had some complications following an operation. But look, Mike Proctor, the world really never saw Mike Proctor at the top end of Test cricket, unfortunately, because of apartheid. That stands for a few of those wonderful brilliant, great cricket players that South Africa had. But for Mike, well, I think he only played seven tests, but he did particularly well in the World Series cricket. And he was a son of Gloucestershire. In fact, Gloucestershire often used to be called in the late 60s and 70s, Proctorshire. He was a whirlwind of a cricketer. He actually didn't really bowl till he was 15. And then he started to bowl a bit more, but he was predominantly a batsman. In the nets at school, someone said to him, come on, you're going to have to bowl here. And he did, and he never looked back. But he was a wonderful cricketer, wonderful, wonderful cricketer. And for me, an even better bloke. I never played against him. I know I look old enough, but I'm not. I'm much younger than Mike. He was 77 when he passed. And the likes of John Lever, Raymond East, Stuart Turner, those Essex heroes, they will remember him infinitely as a magnificent cricketer. I never played against him. I, at the beginning of my career, when I went to South Africa, it was in fact Mike Proctor and indeed Barry Richards who looked after me as a youngster, as a 17, 18, 19-year-old in Durban. And Mike Proctor always looked out for me and included me. And then I got to know him throughout my career when he returned and used to watch and support Gloucestershire. And you could tell how well he was revered. And then towards when I was in charge of Zimbabwe, hosted South Africa because there weren't flights at the time going from South Africa to Australia for the 92 World Cup. And Mike Proctor was their first professional coach. And so the coaches and captains, i.e. Dave Houghton, myself for Zimbabwe, and Kepler Vessels and Mike Proctor, we travelled to Australia in first class. The rest of the players were down the back. But I must say, Mike Proctor and myself did enjoy a glass of wine and, in fact, some South African pinotage. So I got to know him reasonably well through that as a coach. And whenever I visited South Africa, I would frequently bump into him, as I did 4 years ago when South Africa hosted England. And then only just recently, you're talking last month, when we spent the evening together and his very talented wife, Marina, where we were at Durban watching the SA20 and the Durban Super Giants, of which Reese was playing for. So we had a wonderful chat that evening. He loves cricket. He would have been an incredible T20 player today, and he would have been immensely wealthy. One thing about Mike that stood out for me, I often saw quotes, and I remember hearing him talk once, about people said, it's a travesty that you've never played as much test cricket as your talent deserved, of which he replied, politics was more important, and he understood. Other players probably are a little bit more, they feel a bit bitter, but Mike never seemed to publicly. And I thought that was a wonderful thing for Mike. I was very sad just the weekend hearing of his passing, but he had been poorly and he'd been in a coma for some time. So probably one of his last public outings was the SA20 where we enjoyed a beer.
It's interesting that you mentioned about his test career. He wasn't bitter about it. I mean, there's that great quote attributed to him saying what importance is a test career against the suffering of 40 million human beings, which I think sums him up as a man completely.
Yes. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. You know, he almost had his test career taken away, and we know why, and we know how wrong it was. But, I think it's the mark of a man. He was a wonderful, wonderful cricketer. And as I suggested to you at the front end of this interview, he was an even better man.
South Africa's loss was county cricket's gain, though. So my memories of Mike were as a youngster watching John Player League cricket on the BBC on a Sunday afternoon. And a lot of those great South African names, in fact, a lot of great international names, were regular fixtures on the county circuit for the whole summer. And I can remember Mike Proctor, Clive Rice, was it Garth LaRue who was at Sussex?
Garth, yes.
Yeah.
Barry Richards,
yeah.
Peter Kirsten.
Yeah. What names? What absolute stunning players. But there they were.
Eddie Barlow,
yeah. Yeah. It's quite interesting to sort of look at the state of county cricket then and the regular attendance of these huge names from all around the world to what it is now. I don't really want to go down a different avenue, but I can remember seeing that mop of blonde hair, that huge long run-up, that barrel-chested action. And also some of the more unique at the time. They're shots we see all the time now from some of the modern players, but he was cross-batting and hooking and, you know, swashbuckling back in the 70s. It was all unorthodox and raised eyebrows and caused a bit of consternation amongst some county members at the time, but he was definitely ahead of his time.
Yeah, he was, and for youngsters, and, you know, may I suggest that we would have been those youngsters and inspired by those names you mentioned. We all wanted to be Mike Proctor, and we all tried to occasionally, comically, try and imitate his bowling action. It wasn't necessarily from the MCC coaching annual, nor was somebody like Lance Cairns, but we all tried to intimidate him. Gloucestershire, well, he was a great son of Gloucestershire and certainly, you know, their couple of finals they played in, I was listening to Andy Brassington, who is a great chap who you should get on your show. Andy Brassington talking about Mike Proctor on BBC the other day. And he loved returning and celebrating those trophies and reunions. He was a tremendous man, a wonderful man, who the players really enjoyed playing with. He led that Gloucestershire side, to be honest.
And then, as you say, when his playing career came to an end, he went into coaching, and that 92 World Cup. Did you lock horns with him in 92?
Yeah, we travelled together from Zimbabwe to Australia, enjoyed many a glass of wine. And then we played South Africa at Canberra, and Peter Kirsten batted really well against Zimbabwe, and they duly won. And of course, one of my other old great mates, Alan Donald, was in that side. They did very well, having been, if you can remember, just going back reminiscing, South Africa were re-admitted. And we redid the World Cup, but first they went to India and they released the doves, the white doves in India, to celebrate the fact that they have returned. Jimmy Cook, Clive Rice, I think Clive Rice was the captain. But then they went to the World Cup, of which I was involved in, and they got to really, if you remember, the famous semi-final where they needed...
Jonty Rhodes.
Yeah, well, yeah, I caught up with Jonty Rhodes just recently. Lance Klusener, Morny Morkel. There's another chap, you know, who's a wonderful, wonderful cricketer. And Morny Morkel's an even better bloke. So it was lovely to catch up with those three from... I coached Jonty Rhodes back in Pietermaritzburg, back in around 1985. And do you know what? He remembers... He does. He remembers coming to a Christmas coaching clinic in Pietermaritzburg, which I did, and along with Paul Newman, who used to play for Derbyshire.
Yeah, oh God, yeah, yeah, yeah. Not to be confused with the Paul Newman of the Daily Mail. We had Jonty on the show a couple of years back, and we're reminiscing about the Superman catch, the Superman run-out of the Pie Man in Zimamil Huck. One of cricket's, and then that photograph is up there with one of cricket's iconic moments, isn't it?
Yeah, do you know what? in a most lovely way, he's still bonkers. And, you know, he's fidgety, he's energetic, he gives energy to the team, and he hasn't changed that persona since he was a young man. I remember him at that tender age of whatever he was, 11 or 12. But, magnificent to catch up with some of those South African greats. Barry Richards, I did. Met him in Eisner, along with people like the modern day Anrich Nonkier.
Yeah, great.
Now, he's a great big hearted, lion hearted fast bowler. Probably not the tallest, which surprised me, but wow, what a young man. And I have to say, the best chap I met this trip in South Africa, Darren, was a statesman. He was the former Springbok rugby captain who collected the trophy from Nelson Mandela, if you can remember that.
Yeah, they made a film about it.
They did. And Francois Pienaar, I met him. He's involved with Parle Rocks, Jason Roy and Josh Butler's team, in an administrative capacity or a cult figure. And let me just tell you what a marvellous, marvellous statesman he was. That was my moment of the tour.
So before I let you go, just a word about the SA20, which is concluded. Very well done for Rhys. Close but no cigar in the end. But looking at the tournament as a whole, and I was watching it from afar, it seems to be the new kid on the block with the proliferation these days of these franchise leagues springing up, but they seem to have got a lot of things right, in my opinion, down in South Africa.
Yeah, it has. Graham Smith, I don't want to say took a punt, but he's done very well. Society has embraced it, so it's becoming relevant in their society. The cricket was good. You get packed houses, big stadia. And how can I say this? In the nice way, our counties could learn a little bit. They could. It was full of energy. Great, great weather, of course. Yeah. That makes a difference.
And stunning scenery.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, every ground was packed out with very much partisan home support. Nothing wrong with that. But they've created a colour. So, you know, I think something like county cricket could just take a little bit from them and have the home team dressed in colours and whatever. You know, it's not quite done the same here, but it's just everything about the whole evening. It's a very special evening out now. And it's being embraced by everyone there. So on all facets of South African life, and you know, whether you're a schoolboy or leave middle-aged or young lady, you want to go, you want to be at the hottest ticket in town in January and February. So no, well done to them. As for Durban Super Giants, they got to the final. The one difference about it is really quite a tight schedule. So in South Africa, basically, and this is where the players have found it a little bit harder, is it's a game, fly, game, fly, game, fly. That's more or less it. There is no time for finding a bit of nick in the nets. There are really no nets. It's really game, fly, game, fly, game, fly. And it's actually the flying side of it where you've got to be, you leave, it takes you an hour to get to the airport, 2 hours before your flight, and then you've got another hour at the other end after another hour and a half's flight. Let me tell you, that is the demanding bit. That's where Rhys was challenged, but both mentally and physically, is the flying. Mm. It was quite ironic that we flew with him on a couple of flights around South Africa, where Mum and me had the leg room, and poor old Rhys at 6'8" didn't. And he got fined, I believe, in his team meetings, quite a lot of rand, not a lot of pound, but a lot of rand.
Yeah.
The mother offered him her seat with legroom. And of course, when the management heard that, he got fined.
Oh, dear.
Just like club cricket. Great bit of fun, great bit of fun. And yeah, it was an absolute pleasure and honour to watch and travel around and support the Durban Supergiants.
So last word on Mike Proctor then. What's if you could tell someone, so let's say a Martian has just landed and wanted to know about Mike Proctor, what's the one thing that you would say about him?
Again, I never played against him, but I got to know him later in life, and his reputation as a cricketer was second to none. Magnificent cricketer, ebullient, charismatic, strong as an ox, could bowl fast, could hit sixes, but he was also, importantly, a wonderful, wonderful human being. So, you know, I think there's a message there. Talent is important, but, you know, it's nice to be important, but it's important to be nice.
Beautifully said. And before I let you go, a little bird tells me that this week marks a momentous occasion in the House of Topley. It's a big birthday for you.
It sport. Is. Reese is 30. That's very kind of you to suggest that. He's 30, absolutely. Yes. And what else are you going to say?
And it's, 30 times two for your very good self.
I'm 50. That's very kind. Don't I look well on it?
You look fantastic for 50.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. It's a big one for me. 60. I could cry. I can't believe I'm 60. I've got to get my head around it. Absolutely. Yeah, so I don't know what that's... Don't they always say for men, 2, 3 score and 10?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've got hopefully at least 10 years left. Others might say I shouldn't have, but hopefully I will. But, yeah, thank you.
60 balls, that's 10 overs. That's a decent spell.
That is. I'm not sure I could do that today. Hey, it will be off a very short run-up.
Well, the last time I saw you bowl was at Lord's against certain R. Topley, and the leg stump went flying, along with your shirt.
Yeah, it's nice to think that my last wicket was an international cricketer, wasn't it? Shall I leave it on that one?
We will. Well, happy birthday, Don. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And fascinating to hear your reminiscences of the late, great Mike Proctor. That's Don Topley. And some fantastic stories there about the late, great Mike Proctor. This is The Police. This is Fields of Gold.
Lightly, and there have been some that I've broken, but I swear. summer days among the fields of autumn. See the children run as the sun goes down among the fields of gold. You'll remember me when the west wind moves upon the fields of autumn. You can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold.
The Police, Fields of Gold. Here's a chat with David Griffin.
Last weekend of the passing of one of cricket's great names, Mike Proctor, who has left us at the age of 77. Not only an absolute giant of South African cricket, but the impact he had in his time at Gloucestershire should also be remembered. And to help me with some of the memories of such a fine man and such a fine player is David Griffin. Griff, the man himself, joins me. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Morning. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Nice to chat to you, albeit about a very sad subject, but I'm sure we'll talk about some great moments in a great cricketer's life.
Yeah, it's quite interesting to look down at all of his achievements and the events of his life. I mean, it was non-stop, but I think he was always on the right side of events. Let's start with his days at Gloucestershire. And my memories of him as a very young child was watching John Player League Sunday afternoon cricket, usually in a darkened room with sunlight wafting through the cigarette smoke, and my dad sat there smoking his Rothmans Super Kings. But when I think of who was playing, Mike Proctor is a name that absolutely jumps out at me.
Yeah, and I think for many of us, that's a very evocative image, really, of before you're old enough to go and watch cricket, you were sitting usually with your dad, let's be honest, and usually Sunday afternoon just watching the John Player League, and you can hear John Arlott and Jim Laker and Peter Walker and people like that commentating. The thing was that Proctor was made for one day cricket, but of course he was an outstanding first class cricketer. What Proctor would have been worth on the market today is hard to imagine, because but those days were astonishing. I make no bones really, Darren, about when you look at the original golden age of cricket was described as the 1890s till 1914. That is sort of the official golden age of cricket. But I think the second golden age of county cricket was definitely the final quarter of the 20th century. And I think Mike Proctor looms large in that. And I was thinking last night after we discussed doing this podcast, if I was picking the greatest 11 of all the cricketers I've seen play county cricket in the last 50 years, who would be I'd struggle for Proctor not to be the first name on the team sheet because he was that good. And you get a lot of people talk about all-round cricketers, but of course this is a guy who averaged getting on for 40 with the bat, scored 30-odd first-class centuries. So as a batter, he gets in your team. But he took 1,400 first-class wickets at under 20. So he's a bowler who gets in your team legitimately as a bowler or as a batter. So, but it was the way he played for me that was the most astonishing thing, because he was a thrilling cricketer. One word sums Proctor up: it was thrilling. The long run from the boundary and just everything about him. I think it was David Green, the writer, who said he bowls from mid off at 90 miles an hour off the wrong foot. And he was unique. He really was an astonishing player.
And that sort of barrel-chested action, and the in his heyday, that mop of blonde hair as well. I mean, it was very much. I quite like this idea of the second golden age of cricket, because I think you're absolutely bang on with that. From the 70s through to the sort of the turn of the millennium, there were so many characters, and county cricket was full of these people that you could go and see these absolute greats on the world stage, with Mike Proctor being right there amongst it. Now, you mentioned his a couple of his statistics there, but he wasn't someone that was particularly bothered by stats as a player, was he?
No, Now, I think, as with a lot of great players, I mean, some players can recite to you exactly how many hundreds they've scored, their batting average and everything else. But I just think he was a supreme competitor. He just went on the pitch and just played the game. And as we saw frequently, just played it with such abandon. But there's clearly something going off under the skin. You know, he obviously had a very, very clever cricketing brain. The fact that he took LBW hat-tricks from around the wicket and such like, you know, that doesn't come about by accident. You know, you've got to know the obvious thing when you bowl around the wicket is making sure that you've got to get the ball to pitch in line and then to be hitting the stumps. It's not an easy thing to do when you're coming around the wicket. So he's a very clever, clever cricketer. But yeah, absolutely outstanding. But as you say, not encumbered by numbers and stats.
Yeah. Now the unfortunate. I think I'm trying to find the right adjective to use. Let's use unfortunate, but I'm sure other adjectives are probably better. But the unfortunate timing of Mike Proctor hitting his peak coincided with the effect of apartheid. On sport and cricket, and it meant that he couldn't play test cricket through many of his best years. And what impressed me about him was that he didn't seem to be particularly irked by this. And there's a quote, isn't there? What's the about offsetting a possible test career against the suffering of 40 million people in his home country?
Yeah.
I thought that was...
Yeah, well, that again demonstrates, you know, the what do they know, what do they know only cricket know. You know, clearly this guy had got a, like Eddie Barlow, his fellow countryman, you know, they've got a different take on life because of the experiences that they had in their homeland. But I think also that the South Africans that came here, I mean, we sometimes look at the modern game and we extol the virtues of international cricketers, but the vast majority of them we never see playing day in, day out in county cricket. But I just did a quick stock take last night of South African cricketers that played together, that were here in England all at the same time in the late 70s, early 80s. And apart from Graham Pollock, the greats were all here. So you had Proctor and Eddie Barlow, you had Vincent van der Byl, you had Clive Rice, I've got a list somewhere. Oh, of course, Barry Richards, Peter Kirsten. I mean, the South African team, you can't possibly compare what those players had to go through with what was happening to the people who were suffering in South Africa. But in a cricketing sense, in a cricketing context, one was let down by the fact we never got to see that great South African side, for example, against the great West Indian side. You know, how would Viv Richards have matched up against van der Byl, Peter Pollock, Barlow and Proctor, and how would the four West Indian quicks have matched up against Richards, Barlow, Kirsten, Clive Rice and all these kind of players. So, and probably Alan Lamb as well, because I suspect Alan Lamb wouldn't have played for England had he been able to play for South Africa. So, yeah, it was a tragedy that occurred in South Africa as a nation, but from a cricketing perspective, it was also very, very disappointing that we never got to see that South African side at its best. But of course, we got to see those players at their glorious best in county cricket.
Yeah, I guess that's what, rightly or wrong, that's what Ali Bakker was trying to do with his unofficial tours and trying to, if you strip the politics aside, I'm not rightly or wrongly, but I think, you know, just from a cricketing point of view, would have been to try and see the matchups of those players, not only against maybe West Indies, but I mean the Australian side of that time as well, with
Lillian
Thompson and the rest.
Yeah, and I guess at the end of the day, the best that Proctor and his ilk could do was play county cricket against the best in the world. You know, again, looking through the 70s and 80s, Greg Chappell played briefly for a year at Somerset in 68. Ian Chappell never came and played county cricket, and Graham Pollock never came, but virtually every great player came and played. You imagine if today all the great New Zealanders, Indians, Pakistan, whatever nation, if we're all playing here in county cricket, day in, day out, four-day cricket. Imagine the standard. Imagine the opportunities for young people to go and see them and to engage with them, which is what I did with people like Proctor. You see, great players, I think, particularly in cricket, they transcend your own parochialism, your own localised view of your team. So whenever you saw Mike Proctor or Viv Richards or any of these greats play, even though they're in opposition, you didn't really mind if they did well because you respected and enjoyed seeing these great players in action.
Yeah, and they were really accessible. I mean, I know cricket's, you know, we'll save that debate for another time, but the current struggle that Red Bull cricket has got in this country and the fight for its future. But for those of us of a certain generation like us, we're exposed to, you know, not only the Sunday afternoon John Player League with the burr of John Arlott and Peter West with the spotlight shining off his balding pate. But also just you could go down to watch a county game, whoever it might be, but on show would be the absolute cream of world cricket. You know, you mentioned and you know, keeping with Mike Proctor, but you could go down to Chelmsford or to Derby or to Chesterfield or wherever and see these guys, you know, even if there are six men and a dog sat in the stands, on the field are players that you will probably never see any better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing some match previews ahead of the coming cricket season, and one of the previews I'm doing is Championship game. They're only part written, is Derbyshire against Northamptonshire. And I write about a game, a previous game in the 90s. And I noted last night the top five of the Northamptonshire batting order were all Test cricketers, and they had two Test match bowlers. And that was almost the norm around the vast majority of counties. I was looking at a game where we played Gloucestershire at Ilkeston, and there were 10 Test match cricketers playing the game. And this, as you say, was just a sort of mid-table county championship match with not a lot riding on it. But nonetheless, there were some world-class players playing in those games. And as you rightly say, translate that to a Sunday afternoon when people had got time off, the pubs were shut, but the bars were opening cricket grounds, and put these 10 world-class players, Test match players, onto the pitch. And suddenly you've got a, well, you've got what today, I guess, is the IPL or the 100 even, or the Blast. You know, it was, and that was the norm day in, day out in county cricket.
And also the fact that these world stars would come for prolonged periods of time. It's not like today where they'll just come for, and you know, day in, day out, I will read about a new county signing, but it will be so-and-so is signed for four county championship games and the first stage of the Blast, blah, blah, blah. In those days, when you had players, and you can go through the whole list, would come for a prolonged period, if not the whole season, to the point where Mike Proctor's impact on his county was that the county became known as Proctorshire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you see, the thing was that you know, we had Michael Holding for seven seasons. Nottinghamshire had people like Richard Hadley and Clive Rice, Wayne Daniel, Imran Khan, Garth Lariki, the whole, you know, Joel Garner, Andy Roberts. The list is almost endless. But, of course, during the English cricket season, there was nowhere else for cricketers to go and ply their trade if they were from overseas, other than get a normal job in their own country, which of course many did back in the day. But by the time they got to the 60s, late 60s, and overseas cricketers didn't have to qualify to play in England, then it became apparent this was the way forward. And so you will see that Michael Holding and plenty like them, they would start the season in cold April at Derby or at Bristol or wherever, and they'd play the entire summer, and they'd look at the last game of the season and they'd still be in the side doing what they were doing wherever come the back end of September. And that was the norm for all of these players. The difficulty today, of course, is, as you quite rightly say, I mean, we've seen overseas players at Derbyshire come for one game, two games, four games, or not even come at all. You know, we've had countless players. Jai Wardner, Rudolph, Mohammed Yusuf, these are all players who were coming to Derbyshire, signed and sealed, but then didn't, largely because of international commitments, etc. But yeah, you got a real affinity with them, and Proctorshire were, I mean, the crying shame is that Gloucestershire have never won a county championship. And when you consider that over 100 years ago they had W.G. Grace playing for them, in the between the wars they had Wally Hammond, and post-war they had Mike Proctor, Zaheer and people like that, still never won the championship. Quite remarkable, really. Mm. But they did win one-day competitions, and they were formidable one-day side. But Proctor, just going back to him as an individual, I remember seeing him square cut a six sort of, well, more over extra cover, actually. And I remember thinking, I've never seen that before. Now, today, you see it all the time. It's nothing new. But the strength of the man, and don't forget, these were the days when boundaries square of the wicket, wherever you played, were 80, 90 yards. There were big, big boundaries. And he had such upper body strength, timing, everything. Yeah, but Proctorshire was the right name for Gloucestershire, because they did seem to become, despite the fact they had other good players at times, a one-man band.
And cricket bats were just planks of wood in those days as well.
Absolutely.
The clubs that they are now. And then when Mike finished playing, he went into the sort of more administrative side of it, became a match referee, coached at the 92 World Cup. I never knew the guy, I never met him, but he strikes me as someone that had sort of infectious enthusiasm and drive and commitment and set high standards that seemed to rub off on others. And then, of course, there was that infamous episode at the Oval when Pakistan refused to come out after they were adjudged to have been tampering with the ball. And that was Mike Proctor, who was match referee at the time. Yeah. But again, you know, upholding standards of the game, in my view.
Yeah, and I think when you've reached a certain level as a player, I think you've kind of got a free pass in certain areas of the game. Who's going to stand up to Mike Proctor? The likelihood is that Proctor, you know, such a strong character, such a strong individual, and he could be, I mean, lots of people are righteous and right, but often get browbeaten. But I don't think Proctor was that kind of person. And we were very fortunate, because at Derbyshire, albeit we only had Eddie Barlow for 3 years, which is far less than Gloucestershire had Proctor at the helm, Barlow was very much cut from the same cloth. And I think that the two of them, certainly talking to Eddie's widow, who knew, obviously, Proctor well, there's no doubt they were of a similar. And I think there was that desire as men to want to just simply be the best they could be. And let's face it, you know, the vast majority of us that pick up a cricket bat or bowl a ball, we can't ever profess to ever reach the levels that others can go. But I think when you look at Proctor and you look at Barlow, I suspect there wasn't an ounce of anything wasted there. I think what you got with both of those cricketers was the very best that they could be. I don't think you could ever look back and say, if only he'd done this, he could have been this, or if only he'd done that, he could have been that. I mean, they were exceptional players using every ounce of their talent. And I think that comes from character. It comes from having that right approach to the game and that right character on and off the field.
It's a sad loss, and I think sport in general, not only cricket, has lost one of the greats this week. And I think if youngsters are listening to this and they're not quite sure who Griff and I are talking about, maybe do a little bit of Googling, maybe look up on YouTube, and you can see just what an absolute giant of a man Mike Proctor was. He'll be sadly missed, Dave.
Yeah, the best footage to watch, without doubt, and it's appeared on social media several times over the last couple of days, of course, he's 6-13 at Southampton when he bowled out and got the hat-trick at Hampshire in the Gillette Cup semi-final. Or was it the Benson's? I think it was the Benson's semi-final. But I remember I was at school that day, and this is my sister. And this was the difference, I guess, because you had free-to-air television and this was live on the BBC. And my dad and sister were watching that game, and my sister came running down Manors Road in Ilkeston to meet me off the bus and says, quick, run, Proctor's on a hat-trick. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Now, that was 1977, I think. But because, you know, and the back page of the newspapers yesterday, the following day, Proctor trick wins it. You know, that was the back pages. It wasn't football, it was cricket. You know, this was an era when, as you say, for younger people who don't recall, cricket was a back page sport throughout the summer. And if you want to get an idea of what Proctor was like, he's running almost from the boundary. I actually showed it my wife the other day, and she was astonished. She says, where's he running from? I said, well, the boundary, virtually. No, a great, great cricketer. And I feel privileged. Albeit I was only a teenager into my early sort of 19, 20, 21 by the time Proctor had finished playing in this country. But what an absolute joy.
Community radio for Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM.
Well, thanks to David Griffin there for some excellent memories of the late, great Mike Proctor. My thanks also to Don Topley earlier on in the show for his stories as well. Keep it locked to Phoenix. John Chubb is coming up with the Non-League Hour. Playing us out tonight is the one, the only Mr. Mark Butcher. This is new music. This is Cold Eyes, Cold Heart. Turn it up.
Shine down.